Not that it's terribly uncommon, but I did misspeak at the end of the last segment. We're not going to continue the story of the Roman Catholic Church having to fess up before the United Nations because of their abuse of children at the top of the of this hour. This is our final hour, and we're going to turn back to the Torah. Enough news for one day. Yahweh's next statement is extraordinarily important to us. And everything he says is important, but certain things are more important than others. After taking now Abraham through the process to engage in his covenant, God announces on this day, Yahweh cut, karat, established the familial covenant relationship, berith, the nurturing relational agreement, the binding promise, the solemn oath, the mutual alliance, the pledge based upon a marriage vow at home, which fosters and encourages, with, from Eth, Abram, the father who uplifts, to promise, la'amar, to communicate and affirm, to your offspring, Zerah, your seed, I give, Nathan, bestow and devote, therewith, this realm, this land, Eretz, the promised land, symbolic of Yahweh's home. Now, let's review what happened prior to Yahweh affirming that he was establishing the covenant relationship with Abram, who became Abraham, and issued a promise to his offspring, the offspring of the covenant, that they would be able to live with him in his home. And it's interesting what the land represents relative to Yahweh's return, when he returns the entire earth back to the conditions that were experienced in the Garden of Eden and lives with us, camps out with us, in the land, in the heart of the land, in Jerusalem, while his children, by tribe, by descendancy of Jacob, Abraham's grandson, are not only called back into the land, but settled within the various parts of the land of Israel that they were originally given. That's the benefit to his offspring. But let's take a quick walk through what transpired for Yahweh to affirm this to Abraham. The first thing Yahweh asked is for you to walk away from your country, your societal customs, and your earthly family, and to walk with him to the place he was providing. Abraham lived in Babylon. He walked away from Babylon. Yahweh describes Babylon as the most egregiously putrid and corrupting religious and political place on earth. And he's not speaking of Babylon, the country that that once existed, but instead politicized religion, errant societal customs that mislead, that corrupt, that pervert. That's why at the very end of his revelation to Yahweh Kanan, Yahusha said, come out of her, my people, speaking to Babylon. Still mired in the religious and political, military, and economic poison of the place, as it is represents everything that is wrong with human institutions. That's the first thing Yahweh asked. What did Abram do? He acted upon Yahweh's instruction, on Yahweh's guidance, and he walked away from Babylon. It is a prerequisite to participating in the covenant. What next happened? Abraham had some questions. So he went to Yahweh and he asked him some questions about the inheritance. He said, you know, I really don't understand what you're offering me. Could you explain it to me? And God provided him an answer, which just like you and I, we can go to Yahweh. We can read the Torah. We can have our questions answered as well. And so Yahweh took him to the ultimate realm, the realm of God, heaven. And he showed him the nature of stars, and he showed him how the inheritance of the covenant could be embodied in the light that emanates from stars, meaning that we will be immortal, just as light is immortal, existing forever in the past, present, and future simultaneously. Light is perfect. Where there is light, there is no darkness. God equates himself to light, and so by equating us to light, we become his children, his offspring, product of God. Light illuminates the most valuable text in the world, Yahs Torah, and thereby enriches us. We are enlightened by God's instructions. And light is ultimately empowering. When we transition from being a material being to a energy-based being, just on the math of it, we are increased in power by the speed of light times the speed of light. That's what Yahweh showed Abraham. As a result of that, Abraham says, I trust and rely on Yahweh. Now, you see, the prerequisite for trusting and relying is coming to know and understand. First, Yahweh provided the answer so that Abraham came to know him and understand what he was offering. And as a result of coming to know and understand, Abraham said, I trust and rely on you, Yahweh. It is a direct, has a direct relationship to all three of those concepts. First, you have to walk away from your dependence on religion and politics, military schemes, and rely on Yahweh instead. You have to come to know Yahweh to rely on him. You have to come to understand what Yahweh is offering to trust and what he is offering. So the second requirement for participating in the covenant is coming to trust and rely on Yahweh after you come to know him and understand what he is offering and after you've walked away from religion and politics. So what happened next? Yahweh went through the process of introducing us not just to the festival feast that would comprise his seven annual meetings to meet with him, invitations to be called out of this world and to be welcomed into God's company. He put that festival feast in the context of freeing his children from the crucible of Egypt, which is where the first four Moed Mikre were played out. Passover, Pesach. Unleavened bread, matzah. Firstborn children, Bikurim. And the power, the promise of seven, of the Sabbath, Shavuah. Those four Mikre, invitations to meet with God, were played out by God himself intervening in human history to free his children from the crucible of human oppression in Egypt, religious and political oppression, military and economic oppression in Egypt, based upon his fulfillment of Passover, matzah, Bikurim, and Shavuah. And so the third requirement for participating in the covenant is you walk to God to become perfect. Yahweh said that based upon what Abraham had done, that he considered Abraham to be tzedak, righteous, vindicated. The pieces are all coming into view. They're falling into place. The fourth requirement of the covenant is to observe Yah's covenant instructions, to pay attention to the terms and conditions of the covenant. God tells us that his mercy is afforded to those who observe the conditions of the covenant. Now, there's five of them. We've just spoken of the first four. Walk away from religion and politics, from militarism, from jaundiced economic schemes. Trust and rely on Yahweh. Walk to God along the path he has provided so that he can make you tzedak, perfect, righteous, vindicated. and closely examine and carefully consider the terms and conditions of the covenant. The covenant is only presented in one place. Its terms and conditions are only revealed in one place. That is in the Torah. That's why the book is called instructions. That's why it's called teaching. That's why it's called guidance. If you want to participate in the covenant, you have to pay attention to what Yahweh was saying. It's exactly what Abraham did. He listened to everything God had to say. He paid attention to everything God told him. He came to understand what God was offering. And so he was in a position to embrace these terms. Now, by the way, all four of these initial five terms of the covenant are beneficial to us. Yes, they are conditions that we must act upon to participate in the covenant. Everyone is a benefit to us. We gain when we walk away from the corrupt nature of religion and politics. That's why we spend the first hour or two exposing the corrupt nature of politics and militarism and religion. We are vastly better served when we trust and rely on Yahweh. It's enormously liberating, enlightening, invigorating. God's path that we walk to Him to become perfect is a series of seven festival feast parties where we get to engage and spend time with and be enriched by and empowered by our Creator. It's our benefit. Observing the conditions of the covenant involves studying, closely examining, and carefully considering Yah's Torah guidance, which is the most rewarding thing you can do with your time. Coming to know God as He is extraordinarily rewarding. Coming to know what He's offering is amazingly beneficial. The last requirement to participate in the covenant is that parents are asked to circumcise their sons on the eighth day. Circumcision is about cutting, karat. The covenant was cut, remember? Karat, with Abraham and through his offspring to us. It is about cutting, about separating us from human religious and political institutions and separating us unto God. It is about cutting the deal. And so the covenant is cut just as circumcision represents cutting. More on that in a moment. There are five conditions that must be met to participate in the covenant. Abraham at this point had not met the fifth of those. But there are five. The fifth is that we, as parents, circumcise our sons. That we do so on the eighth day. The eighth day is chosen for two reasons. One, it's the time that human blood is the most prone to coagulate, which means that there would be the absolute least risk of injuring the child. The second reason is eight is the symbol of eternity. Now, this is not being done because the child says, oh, gee, I want to be part of the covenant. Could you, please whack my thing-a-ling? No. It's for the parents. You know, sometimes I have women write me and say, okay, this was something that God asks of men, that they be circumcised, but what does He ask of women? Last time I checked, women were parents. He's asking parents to circumcise their children on the eighth day. It's a minor procedure. It's extraordinarily safe for the child. And it has ongoing health benefits. In fact, in Africa, the leaders of many African nations where sexually transmitted diseases are wreaking so much havoc, like proliferation of AIDS in some African countries is 40 or 50% of the population. But there is a direct correlation between circumcision and not being as subject to venereal diseases. And so there is a benefit to it, but the purpose of circumcision is for the parents. God talks about it being done, the Zakar, to remember. He wants us to remember as we're bathing our child, as we're caring for our child, to raise our children so that they become members of the covenant. That's why he wrote in stone that fathers corrupt their children to the third and fourth generation, rather than remembering to raise their children so that they routinely recite the Torah to them and teach them the Torah. Most parents don't. They raise their children to be religious, to be Christians, or to be Muslims, or to be Hindus. That was a horrible story out of India today of a Hindu religious elder telling the town folk to go rape a young woman because she showed interest in a man that was not part of her community. You know, in the Hindu religion, everything has a caste system. And Hinduism, very much like Paul's Christianity, exactly like Muhammad's Islam, women have no rights. They're lorded over and essentially the property of men and of their husbands. Now, Paul told women to submit to their husbands, that the husbands lord over them. Muhammad essentially said, in fact, didn't essentially, absolutely said women are like animals. They exist for a man's pleasure. And so in the Hindu religion, it's patriarchic as well. And in that system, women don't have any rights. And so the elder of the religious community had the woman raped, gang raped, because she defied their rules, their religious rules. God wants us to do just the opposite. He doesn't want us to raise our children to be religious, but to engage in the relationship. And circumcision is the sign of that relationship because it cuts the part of the male anatomy that is responsible for conceiving life within the marriage of where a man and woman come together in love as one to conceive children. The point of contact. But he would. It would happen shortly thereafter. So on this day, Yahweh cut the familial covenant relationship with Abraham to promise to your offspring, I give henceforth this land. Keep in mind that Yahweh took Abraham to his realm, to Shamayim, the spiritual realm, to show him what he would ultimately inherit. But recognize it is the story of the covenant that on the seventh Moed Mikre, following Yahweh's return, where he says specifically that he's going to reconcile his relationship with Yehuda and Yisrael, that he will begin to camp out with his children, the covenant's children, in the promised land, in Yisrael, for 1,000 years. This is directly prophetic of that event. Maybe the most satisfying and anticipated event in all of human history. Yeah, who says you can't take it with you? The commercial just suggested that if we consume silver and gold, we will be just as healthy as we could possibly imagine. Yeah, imagine that. Consuming silver and gold and that doing anything for you other than turning you a funny color. Well, turning back to Yahweh's testimony, I think he is a touch more reliable. On this day, Yahweh cut karat, the familial covenant relationship, vereth, with Eth, Abram, father who uplifts, to promise, la amar, to your offspring, zera, seed, always singular. I give, bestow, and devote from the Tan, therewith this land, this realm, this place, Eretz, speaking of Yisrael and what Yisrael symbolizes, which is Yahweh camping out with his children in his home for all time. The Hebrew word translated cut, as I've shared with you, is karat. It is routinely deployed in connection with the formation of the covenant. In fact, every time the covenant is formed, it is established, it is reestablished, it is reaffirmed, it is always karat. It describes the manner business associates or a judge might cut a deal. God selected it for a number of important reasons. First, the purpose of the covenant is to separate God's children from the world, from human institutions, and to set us apart unto him. Second, karat is used in connection with circumcision. And circumcision, God will soon tell us, is the sign of the covenant. And while it is seldom translated, much less considered, let's not neglect F, which was rendered with. The covenant isn't something anyone can do alone, even God. It is a relationship, and that requires at least two consenting parties. Among all the words that you will find in Yahweh's word, Bereth may be the single most important. It is based upon the Hebrew words Be'eth and Bara. Be'eth is the Hebrew word for family. It means family, home, and household. Bara speaks of building, of nurturing, especially of providing that which is required for a family to live and grow, to establish the family name. Yahusha, when he spoke Hebrew to Shimon Kefesh, used bara in connection with the line that Roman Catholics have corrupted to infer that their organization is somehow authorized by God. Yahusha used bara to say, upon this rock, Al-Ze-Sur, I will build Ibarra. I will establish, I will affirm, I will nurture. Imikre. My invitations to meet with God. There was no church. Bara was used in that sentence by God. It's an extraordinarily important term. It is one of the two words that forms the basis of Bereth, Bara, and Beth. It's to nurture a family. We know this because of the letters that comprise Be'eth, meaning family, home, and household. It begins with the Hebrew letter Beth is the second letter in the Hebrew alphabet. It's drawn to show a home. It's a home with a single entrance. A floor plan of a home is Be'eth. That's why it conveys family. The second letter is a yod, which is the first letter in Yahweh's name, because it isn't just any home. It isn't just any family. It's Yahweh's family. The third letter is the teth, which is depicted as a X, an X with a circle around it. It speaks of God's protection of his family, and the X was symbolic, as it has always been, of you have my mark on it, my signature on it, my stamp on this family. You can trust everything that I have said about this family. The mark was always used on ancient correspondence to affirm that you could trust that this came from the person who's claimed to have authored it. That's how Be'eth is written. The only difference between Be'eth and Bereth is the addition of the Hebrew rosh, which means that Yahweh's family, upon which we have his word, his signature, is a family upon which we come to know because we can use our heads. It's the first family, which is what resh means. But it's also the family, as the letter is drawn showing a human head, that we have eyes to see, observe what Yahweh has offered, ears to listen to what Yahweh has to say, a mouth to respond to what Yahweh has offered, and a brain to process all of this information. That's the only difference between Be'eth and Bereth. If we were to boil down the whole of Yahweh's witness to a single word, the entirety of the Torah to a single word, it would be Bereth covenant. God revealed himself through the inspired writings of prophets and scribes in order to form a family-oriented covenant relationship with us. The Bereth is a legally binding and valid agreement between parties to do or not to do the things which are specified. This covenant is a compact, a term Webster defines as joining together a thing that is firmly built and solid, something that is expressed concisely for the purpose of forming a close union. The dictionary's definition of league is also relevant to our understanding of Bereth, as it is a covenant or compact made between parties for the promotion or maintenance of common interests for mutual assistance and service. It is the aggregation of and association of the parties to achieve a common goal. You see, God benefits from this covenant, just as we do. While we may look at each of the conditions of the covenant as beneficial, and certainly the benefits of the covenant are overwhelmingly beneficial, the reality is that God benefits as well. Otherwise, we would not have been created. The universe would not exist. Yahweh benefits from the covenant just as parents benefit when they conceive children and invest their lives into their children's being raised so that they are strengthened, they are protected, they are enlightened, their lives enriched by the shared experiences with their children. Our friend Glenn has called in I'm sure this time to talk about the covenant. I liked your insights. The last time, Glenn, you were right on with your ironies.
You may not like this one as much. Actually, I just called him briefly in defense of colloidal silver. Okay, you picked on it kind of unfairly coming into this segment, and I'm not talking about that particular product or anything, but I would point out that silverzine cream, silver sulfadiazine, is a long recognized anti-infective used post-operatively for surgery. And you talked about turning people blue, which is an allusion to a condition called argyria, which only occurs when people ingest large amounts of the wrong thing. And just as one would not take an entire bottle of aspirin for a headache, one would not take a huge quantity of a new birthday preparation. You know that I'm an earth fairy, but I can personally attest to the effectiveness of properly utilized colloidal silver. And also, you can find some commercials. Even if it would fix all your problems. Now, I will challenge the gold. I'm not at all sure there are any substance for gold. Colloidal silver, absolutely.
Let me address that, and thank you, Glenn. I was having fun with them because they added colloidal gold to the list of colloidal silver, and it caused they say you can't take it with you. Well, if you're consuming gold and silver, I guess you can. I have acknowledged on this program that I am aware that colloidal silver has an antibiotic effect, particularly when used as an ointment, and it has for a long time. I don't know if consuming silver has that effect. There is a much more suitable product, I think, than consuming silver, colloidal silver, to have an internal antibiotic effect, and that is garlic. Has a long history of having an antibiotic effect. And while I would have no issue with silver based creams because they have been effective in promoting healing, I am not going to endorse the idea of consuming silver or gold as having a benefit. And since they made such outrageous claims about it, I thought it was appropriate to poke fun, particularly since they were now combining gold and silver together in terms of something to be ingested. I don't make a dime from this program, so I really don't care what is being made in terms of claims by the advertisers. It's meaningless to me. Quite honestly, I'm disappointed since you brought it up. by both the news feed for GCN. I think SRN is a joke, and it diminishes the credibility of every program syndicated by GCN to have SRN as the news feed. And I've told the management many times. And I think that if you consider the list of products advertised on GCN, very few of them are nationally recognized products. Most of them are things that would appeal to doomsayers because of the propensity of this program, of this syndicate to promote conspiracies. But also, this program does host a number of nutritional programs that sell nutritional supplements. And most of those nutritional supplements, if not all of them, have never been tested by the FAA because they're just a nutritional supplement. And they make typically outrageous claims about them, claims that have never been proven through double-blind tests. And so I think there's a credibility gap in the amongst the advertisers on the GCN, and I would love to see GCN have advertisers with more credibility. To describe the definition of covenant, we did just at the end of that last segment have a call from Diane at calling in from Colorado that had looked up covenant, and I don't know if it was in a Hebrew English lexicon or in a English dictionary. But since I was unable to see her specific question, I'd encourage her to call in and we'll try to address it. By any definition, however, the covenant is a relationship. And relationships are contingent upon participation by both parties. This case, the covenant, describes a partnership between mankind and God. Yahweh only honors his side of the agreement with those who honor their responsibilities within the relationship. There are very specific things that Yahweh has asked us to accept, to embrace. Unfortunately, however, very few of these conditions have made their way into any of the popular Christian salvation schemes, where God or the church does everything and the participants do almost nothing save make a profession of faith. Profession of faith isn't one of the things that God requests. Now, mind you, God's salvation is only offered to those who are part of his covenant family. And there are five conditions for being part of the covenant family. So there are five conditions to being saved. And not one of them is part of any Christian profession, not part of any Christian teaching. In fact, most of them are in direct opposition to what Christians preach. Well, we have been over some of this ground before, since it is essential to our relationship with God, indeed to our salvation. Recognize that in the ancient Paleo-Hebrew, the script of Revelation, the first letter of Vayreth, covenant, is Vayeth, which serves as the Hebrew word for family and home. It was written by drawing a picture of a protective enclosure. It's symbolic of a family living securely in a home. It's the blueprint of a home. It therefore serves to define the Vayreth, picturing it as a home, sheltering and protecting a household with one way in. The second letter of Vayreth is the Rosh, which was scribed by illustrating an individual's head. It was designed to convey the idea that this is the first order of business, the most important thing to accomplish, the top priority. This is the first family. But also, that the head, we have eyes to observe, ears to listen, a brain to process that information, and a mouth to respond. The third letter, as I shared with you before, is the Yod. It was depicted illustrating an arm and a hand. It's the upper arm reaching down, the forearm reaching out with an open hand. It's the first letter of Yahweh's name. It visually communicates the will, the authority, and the ability of God to do whatever is required to achieve his stated goal. Yahweh, the ultimate power and authority in the universe, will stop at nothing to save his children. Well, that would be with the exception of compromising his integrity and infringing upon free will. The desire of his heart is the formation of a familial covenant relationship with humankind. He has the ability to lift us up, to grasp us by the hand, to lead us from the world of human institutions to his home, to this realm that he is promising the descendants of the covenant. If Ta is the final letter of Vereth, it described what has to be achieved to facilitate the priority of enlarging our Heavenly Father's family. The Ta was drawn in the form of an upright pillar. It designates a doorway and the tent pole. The tent pole was that which secured the covering of a home and also enlarged it, because the higher the tent pole, the larger the home can become. When it is erected, it not only enlarges the shelter, but it makes the covering more secure. Yahusha is the upright pillar who enlarges Yahweh's family and home, which in turn is embodied in the festival of shelters, which is enabled, is available for those of us who wish to camp out with God in his home, to enter his home through the doorway to heaven, which is Passover, where Yahusha served. If the final letter is a teth, then it's denoted, as I shared before, by an X surrounded by a circle, telling us that God has signed this, he has given this his stamp of approval, that you can trust everything he said about the covenant.